Hi, this is Robinson Wells, author of The Counterfeit, and you're listening to the LDS Women's Book Review.
Hello and welcome to LDS Women's Book Review. I'm Shanda, here with my friends Sheila and Hillary, and we have a special guest today. We are here with Rob Wells, author of The Counterfeit, that came out in July.
Hello!
That's proof that he's really here, and we're not just pretending. If you guys have any news that you want to start off with first, because I have lots, so you might want to get yours out of the way now before I go off on my tangent.
Let's see. I just finished my the 12-book Left Behind series, finally.
I am still on book 6, and I can't.
You know what? I'm obsessive about when I start a series, I have to finish it.
I get bored too fast.
And there were the 3 prequels, too, that I read. So that's like 15 books in the whole thing.
You are a very driven woman. I am still on Assassins, because I just, like, I want to finish it, but I just kind of got to that point where other things had to come
first. Is that book 5?
Well, it's not like I don't have anything else to do, you know? I read until like 1 or 2 in the morning, then I wake up the next day and
I'm
suffering.
Oh, crap, there's that primary program. Oh, whoops.
Yes, ooh, I've got to teach preschool.
Well, that's what we do when we're readers, you know? We punish ourselves and stay up really late.
And I also read The Counterfeit again.
Anything else?
I started Beverly Lewis's last...
I have that!
The Brethren!
I have that from the library. Oh. It's sitting there for 2 days because I wanted to focus on this.
So
I haven't even touched it yet.
I just started. It's really good.
Is it good?
It's heading in a good direction.
Okay, when we're done here, we're going to have a really good discussion and then I'm going to read The Brethren because I've just been waiting for that. You think you know what's going to happen, but I have no idea.
I think I have an idea. But I was very excited when I...
We'll have to compare it. Tell me if it is what you thought it was.
Okay.
And you, Hillary, read anything lately?
I'm reading 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, although I don't know what they are, so don't ask me. And sorry, I'm only like 10 pages into it still. I've got Tuesdays with Maury. I've heard that's good.
Oh, it's a wonderful
book. Is it
book.
Good? I haven't started it yet, but I've heard it's really good.
I've never even heard of it.
I haven't heard it. It's a bestseller.
It was made into a movie, too.
Has it been made
Same
into
guy
a movie?
Who did the... 5 People You Meet in Heaven.
I haven't read that one. That was excellent. The movie was good.
And I got from the library Left Behind movie.
Oh my god!
I did not want to get the movie because I think it would have made just ruin the book.
It was so dumb. Oh my gosh!
I did not
make it all the way through.
You know what?
I'm like, the book is so much better.
Kirk Cameron.
Okay, exactly. He was cute in the 80s, but he was like at the end.
That is the reason. He plays Buck, right?
Yes.
And that is the reason why I did not want to see the movie because I thought this is really silly.
Oh, he was great. What show was that? Growing Pains.
Adorable.
Everyone had a crush on him, but he cannot be Buck Williams. And Rayford. Annoyed the la-la-la-la out of me.
Ooh, la-la-la-la.
It was that strong.
He annoyed me. He's the guy that's in Always.
There's no way.
Which I love Always, but I hate
him. Are you talking about Richard Dreyfuss?
No. He's the tall guy that woos her towards the holiday.
I've only seen Always. Was it Always?
Yes, it's
Always.
I've only
seen
that
once.
I love that movie. It's so sad. But
I don't like it because he dies.
I know. Oh, so if you haven't seen Always, now you know how it ends.
I'm sorry about that. I just said he died.
A couple of people die, but we won't talk about
that. Anything else of interest?
I'm reading... Gosh, I have a stack on my bedside table thing.
All nonfiction?
Like 15. Only one's nonfiction.
Really?
Only one's fiction. Sorry.
Oh, darn.
She got all excited. No, sorry, 2, because I have Assassins. No, it's not Assassins. It's Apollyon. Mm-hmm. Is that book 6?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still on Assassins, so I'm on book 5.
And I read this in a matter, I read The Counterfeit on the plane ride there and the plane ride back, and I got
to
it
New
all
York?
Done, so, yeah. So
cool.
There you go.
Cool. And my husband actually read it on the plane. I actually have a funny story about The Counterfeit, okay? I have the autographed copy.
Which
so
we all
now.
Now.
Yes.
Really? Look at that.
Well, okay, and I tried to take this again.
It's
I couldn't help it.
There you go.
Now I can't sell it on eBay.
My husband took it
with my name in it.
Oh. Anyway, I want to tell my funny story.
Sorry.
Okay. It was not funny at the time. Now it's funny. My husband was taking a lot of business trips in August, you know that, and so he was telling me he was getting kind of bored with not much to do, and there wasn't always something on TV. So I said, why don't you take a book to read?
Oh.
So he took Wake Me When It's Over and read it and loved it, and then the next trip he took The Counterfeit. His very last trip, okay? He's coming back. I'm at the little visitor pickup place because he was supposed to just meet me. So I'm sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting and nothing's happening. So I call him to find out where he is. And he said, I'm at the luggage counter. They lost my luggage.
Oh,
and you know what
man.
The first thing I thought of? Okay, and this was the day before my husband's birthday. The first thing I thought of was, he had my autographed copy of The Counterfeit. I was like, honey, that was my autographed copy.
I'd eat him too. Like,
well, apparently they found it and brought it out the next day. They shuttled it out to our house and everything, and it went to San Francisco.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. My husband is on the phone. He told him, I wish I could have been with it.
Yeah, no kidding. That'd have been
but
nice.
Anyway, I was just very happy. He comes, he's like, here's your book, Cannibal. Thanks.
Oh, it's good to see you too, honey.
Yeah, thank you. Thank goodness my book is okay.
And it wasn't like, oh, you're fine. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. On your very last trip, you're finally home, and they lose your luggage, and, you know, but no, the first thing was, the counterfeit.
So you didn't nice know that your priorities. Book brought out these type of emotions.
Well, I'm glad you
people.
Found it, because I wouldn't have signed another one.
Oh, thanks. Nice to know how much you care.
Only one.
One per person.
See if we have you back. I'm just kidding. No, I bet I could have gotten you to sign me another one.
Well, we'll see.
Well, I'm not going to lose this.
I've got the pumpkin cookies.
So yes, you do have the pumpkin cookies.
It's a good bribe.
Anyway, I have a big, that big event I was telling you about last time, the murder mystery dinner that mm-hmm. Rob was at, that I went to, and there were a whole bunch of authors there, and they had all these little bookmarks, and I brought collected them so I could remember who was there. Jerry Barrowman, C.K. Bailey, which I never even heard of C.K. Bailey before, so I'm excited to read some of C.K. Bailey stuff. And there was H.B. Moore, who's, what's her,
Heather.
She was there, and all of these authors played parts in the murder mystery, which was actually kind of fun to see him.
So who
Jenny Hansen, she was a murderer.
Really?
She walked around with a Uzi under her sweatshirt or something.
She was one of three.
One of three.
Oh my mm-hmm. heavens.
Toni Sorensen Brown.
She doesn't look like a murderer.
I haven't heard mm-hmm. of Toni either.
Toni is a national author who has done a couple of books for the LDS market before, but they've been photography.
Oh, really?
From what I understand.
Oh, that's interesting.
But yeah, she has several books on the national market. That's She's been around for a long time.
Wow. See, I just haven't been with it, I guess, because this is why I gathered all of this, because I wanted to know. Oh, another C.K. Bailey one, The Whisperings. And then Sonia O'Brien. I actually have been wanting to read one of her books for a long time. I've checked out Raging Sea, I think, is the first one. I've checked that out twice, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. And her newest one is Perfect Shot. Oh, we sat at Jeff Savage's table, okay?
That one.
He was the catacyclist from The Counterfeit.
Nuh-uh. Yes. I wanted to see that.
And it was so much fun seeing him there. And he carried around his little encyclopedia, which I'm not... Encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia.
And I was wondering, because I don't remember there being an encyclopedia in the book or anything. Was that just his?
There was. In the book he read several books. He very...
Because
wasn't
there a
book
library
smart.
In
yeah, there was
there?
A library. And he'd read everything in the library, and so
okay,
that's just
I
how
see.
Jeff was portraying it.
I get it. I mean, it seemed to fit, but then when I was thinking about it, I didn't remember it. But he
did
a really good
so
job.
Did he portray it well?
Did you feel like
he brought the character to life?
I liked him.
Job.
I liked
he
the
did a
character.
Good job.
I thought it was good.
There was no room. He brought a bike, but there was no room. It was very cramped. Aww. So there was no room for the bike.
That would have been so good.
That would have been fun to see him wheeling around in there.
Yeah.
Marcy Gallagher and Carrie Robinson, I haven't heard of them either, but they, this
I've
is the
Carrie Robinson.
Banner is Unfurled.
I have the first one of those.
Oh, do you? Have you read it?
I'm halfway through it. It's been good.
Not to tell me, very good. Tell me if you like it, we might
I didn't know the
podcast.
Second one was out, though.
And I already talked about Jerry Barrowman. He has the two books about the war. Which
right.
one is it, World War II?
First one's World War I, second one's
exactly.
World War II.
Exactly.
That's right.
And I told you, a
that
friend of ours
yeah.
just finished reading these, and she said they are excellent. If you mm-hmm. love historical mm-hmm. fiction,
and
you
I
read
asked,
them?
I have not read them. He has done other books, though. That
right.
Nonfiction.
These are his first okay. fiction. Yeah, he's mm-hmm. done nonfiction, I believe, biographies.
I spoke
oh, wow.
to him,
so,
I spoke to him and he said that they are connected, but you can read them independently.
Oh, I like
those
kind
of like how Awake Me and The Counterfeit.
I was going
to
say, you can read this
connected, but you can read
not,
it independently.
Right.
Yes, you can.
Then Serpentide. Kale Hawk. I've heard so many good things about that book. I'm anxious to read it.
I want to read this one also.
Of course, The Emerald. And the
Jenny
and the Bracelet okay. series from Jenny Hansen just
those.
Came out. There was a whole light dancing thing from Anita, like a
Aww.
Series lately. There's like three of them or something.
Four.
I
four
want
of them.
To read.
Yeah.
I want to read those.
I can't really remember.
I like her stuff.
Then Claire M. Poulsen. He was.
I
there.
Danced with Anita Sandfield at the
oh, yes.
murder mystery
really?
Dinner. She and I danced the Lindy Hop.
You were. I see, and I need to read. You were Luciano from one of Michelle's books.
Yes.
Right? I
that name.
It's one of the her what do they call it young adult or young
mm-hmm. they're latter day
spies.
Oh,
or...
now she'll listen to this and hate me.
See, that's what we feel like we can't remember stuff.
There's just
it.
A lot.
Latter day rescue or something to that effect.
Actually, I got one of those books as a prize at the murder mystery dinner, and so
Michelle, I love you.
It's kind of late. It's after 9. We can forgive him.
You
kind
of get brain dead when you've got this thing in front of you.
No, but you know what? As far as Michelle goes, she makes one hot biker chick.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. I mean, she's probably going to smack me next time she sees me because I said that, but... She did that whole attitude thing, and she just pulled it off really well. I gotta get our pictures up on the website. I have a picture with me and I believe it's Sonia O'Brien and Jeff Savage at the murder mystery dinner, and she's looking at the camera all attitude. Michelle is. She's got the whole look. Oh, they were just. It was just so much fun seeing them. Who was she supposed to be? She was being. She was acting as a.
I don't know whose book she is.
Oh, I used to know. It starts with a C. The character. Cody,
Cody Banks.
Close.
It's something like
that. Yeah, I would have expected it to have been a man playing that part, because it was kind of a, it's like Kate or something like that. I kind of was thinking it was more masculine, but it was, she's a tough woman.
Yeah.
And I thought she did a pretty good job with that. The other one was, who is this?
Tom Rolston.
Did The Inheritance. Really, didn't you say you wanted, is that the history? This is historical. Yes, and I got this one because I knew you would, wanted to talk to you about it because I knew you would be interested in that.
Yes, I would.
Now, about Jeff, and we're just going to take a little side note. He has a series called Chandra Covington.
Oh, really? Okay?
Now, when I happen to have my name drawn from the little people who guessing and did really a crappy job of guessing who... murdered who. Anyway, which is about everybody, I think. But anyway, my name was drawn for one of the baskets, and I got Annette Lyons' basket. And as they were calling my name, Jeff pops up and says, because it's, you know, it sounds similar. He's all, not to be confused with Chandra Covington. And he told us, just like storytelling, the first part of his book, the Chandra Covington book, where she has she inherits the house from her grandma. I don't know if you've read his
House of Secrets.
Yes. And he, just listening to him, like, I was like, forget reading the book. I'll just listen to you tell it, because he was describing things and just the whole way he was getting into it and talking about it. And he kept us entertained the whole dinner.
Huh. Cool. So,
but, you know, when we weren't visiting with authors and stuff, when we were just sitting at the table doing stuff, he would come back from doing his little catacyclist thing, and we'd ask him a couple questions, and it was just really neat.
Fun experience.
And I told him that we wanted to have him on the podcast sometime, too. So we'll have to get a hold of him and plan a time when we can redo it.
Books, then.
Oh, I think you won't be disappointed.
I probably won't. Because I've been pleasantly surprised doing the podcast and reading all this fiction.
This looks like a good pile of books that...
Well, that's why I wanted to refer back to it, because, you know, we're always looking for new material.
Cool.
Anyway, books I've read, well, let's see, almost nothing.
Oh, I was going to go to sleep.
I know, I was going to say, well, here we go. Yeah.
No, almost nothing. I have my big pile of books I do want to read, top of the list now.
That now go to the renew pile.
Yes. In fact, I do have a whole list on my Palm Pilot. So you might have 2 pages in your planner, but mine is just, I don't even know how many pages
it
would be.
I will never go to a Palm.
Yeah, whatever. That's what I said.
I like paper.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
One of these days, paper will be obsolete.
You get to.
Yes,
yes. Please do.
Please.
So, books that I've read recently. I'm very fortunate right now in that I'm reading the upcoming manuscript by Willard Boyd Gardner.
Hey! Sorry, we like him. Sorry. He did not know he was going to get this kind of
No, rant. I did, because I listened to your podcast on it. So.
That's why he saved it. He didn't say a word this whole time, because you wanted to get us with
a reaction from us.
Yeah. Well,
that was a reaction.
Okay, so what do you think?
It is good. It is awesome.
It's different than his other two, right?
It is different. It is different. But good. He is a great writer. I love Race Against Time. One is called Souls of Men.
Ooh.
Tentatively, that could change.
Yeah, it could always change.
You know,
yes, and
that.
Of course the cover.
But it's due out, I think, May, June, something like that.
Wow. Hey, you know what? If he needs anyone else to read the manuscript, you can
we like
if
to
you're
read
listening, Mr. Gardner.
Yeah.
Oh,
so what?
So
do you...
it is awesome so far. I mean, I'm not too far into it. I just got it last week. But it is awesome.
Oh, sounds good.
I'm so jealous.
Very good. No, he's on a good list.
He is one of the good ones I discovered. I found his name when people were talking about their favorite authors, and I think it was Jenny and a couple other people mentioned how much they like Willard Boyd Gardner, so I went and checked out his books, and I liked Race Against Time, but then I got to Pursuit of Justice, and that was just an awesome book.
So good.
And
I still need to read that.
Oh, you haven't read it yet?
You've talked about it every month. Oh, I need to read it.
It is so fabulous. It's just,
I was reading it screaming on the couch. Oh, he turns around.
Oh, you're just reading the book.
Oh, no, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I'm jealous, too.
It'll be out soon.
Yeah, I can't
wait. It's good. It's really good. The thing I love about his books is they're just so
personable, real. Mm-hmm.
They are. That is,
I mean, yeah. they're still genre fiction, and it's still shooting and gunfights and everything. Mm-hmm. But the characters are very real, and he writes just very vividly. And
yes, and the men like it. He writes really well. I mean, we enjoyed it. We're women. We enjoyed it. But I believe, I mean, it's mainly for the men. Probably directed more to interest men.
I think so.
There isn't a lot of like romance and stuff in it. It's a lot of action, but it's good. Who needs romance when you've got a book written like that?
And this one, I'm not too far into this one, but it appears as though there is romance.
If there's romance,
you have a little bit.
That's frosting on the.
Because if you had romance in yours at all, it would have just
Well, I don't know.
It would have. Well, romance
is an integral part of the plot. You kind of have to have something there. It creates conflict and also resolution.
Kissing.
Yes. Although I think, a little bit more of that
would hurt much.
Unless the men were reading it, and they're like, again.
Blah.
Oh, come on, I don't know any men that complain about kissing, so.
Reading about it is different
than doing it, that's true.
Yeah.
So what else have you been reading?
Just that?
I'm reading a series of books for another publisher who is not an LDS publisher, but wanted a quote for this series of books.
Wow.
And I can't say much about it because they haven't come out yet, or even what publisher they are, but suffice it to say that they are trying to market the books to an LDS audience, which is why they sent them to me so that I could quote it. And they are a series of books targeted towards 13-year-old girls.
Really?
And can I tell you how much I'm enjoying them? And, she sent them to me, and she's like, it's a series, and so I was expecting, the first one or two. I got, 9 books, and they're short.
How exciting is that?
See, I would be interested in reading something like that because I have an almost 9-year-old, and so...
Exactly, would you like it?
It wouldn't bother me to help you out here.
Wait, how old's your daughter again?
4.
That's not really her age yet.
Right.
So is this something that you think would be appropriate for the LDS market?
You know, I am not too far into him yet, just because, like I said, they're...
He's real
thin. I haven't given them much of a chance yet, which I need to because they need someone back for me soon, but I just been putting it off.
Okay. Well, I guess, you got to be careful what you wish for on people sending you such a review. I found that out recently, but I won't go into details. Needless to say, I hit the end of chapter 1, closed it, and won't ever open it again.
Okay, and then we are going on. Yes.
That's really bad. Anyway, but it wasn't a mainstream person or publisher, so. Anyway, let's see. I think that's pretty much everything. I've read a book that I went through. I just can't remember what it is, and so it'll probably come to
me. We can count
magazines. A quarter into
I've read the read end sign. I know, I'm like, how many magazines did I read this month? At least 3. Yeah.
4
of these. My visiting teacher read the message to me from the end. That's about
that
as
counts.
Close to reading
that
as
counts.
I know. Okay, so I think, other than the murder mystery dinner, which I need to get those pictures up on the website so everyone can see them, I think that's pretty much everything on my end, except for before we go into anything too far, I don't want to forget that some of the discussion we're going to have with Rob will probably include references to the goodies section about the counterfeit on his website, www.robisonwells.com. Look for the goodies section.
And they're fat
and it's
goodies.
Pretty cool.
Goodies.
Right.
And they're
my type of goodies.
They're organized by chapter, and you said you're adding how many a week?
I try to add 5 a week.
And right now you're up to chapter 20.
Chapter 20. And just as a warning, they're full of spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's plenty of stuff on there for people I haven't read the books to, so.
Well, and
I should say.
I read it as I went at first.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I've read,
well, you've read the book
before.
Right.
But I just kind of wanted to see, I wanted to be able to remember, and also if I had ideas or questions or whatever, I wanted to write it down as I went. But then as I got further into it, I didn't want to stop at the end of each chapter, so I'd read 3 chapters and then go back to the website. Because I was really getting into it, and I was like, you know, you hit chapter, and then you hit chapter 20, I was like, oh man, now it's starting to get really good, and there's no more, so I'm going to have to just... I'll just have to check back every week and read the ones you put up.
Yeah, I'm going to post more stuff tomorrow, so...
Excellent, we'll be there.
I really liked the way the marketing went with this, because we knew it was coming out in July, and you built up to it with the Trial of the Century, with...
Something Patriot, what was it again?
The Unknown Patriot.
And I tried to solve those things, okay? I suck at that. I just can't do it. I figured out that the first one was longitude, latitude. I found out where they were, but it never occurred to me to switch to satellite. So I didn't get the letters. I didn't even get that. I was just really, like, is this like, you know, do we cross out the ones that are same? I'm just not meant to do that kind of stuff, okay?
Well, it was a first time at doing something like that for me.
Mm-hmm. And, I thought it was pretty
and
well.
It was cool, but it was too hard.
Oh, yeah.
But we expected it to be really hard. We wanted it to be really hard.
It was.
But
don't worry. And we shared a table at the dinner with the lady who won the tickets.
That's right.
Yes, when we found out her husband actually works at one of the Seagulls
stores.
Serious? So we're talking to him, and then he told me that his wife was the one that won that contest and everything. And I was like, wow, small world. You know, and that was just really cool to get to share a table with them and with Jeff Savage. And,
yeah.
Wait, but it was funny because we walked around that room for 5 minutes trying to figure out what table we wanted to sit at.
You got to choose?
Trying to choose which author you like.
We're like, I'm like, well, some of them didn't have any names on them, and so we were like, and I didn't want to be off in the corner. I wanted to be in the action, so we just squeezed in there with Jeff and his wife and his parents, and then a couple from Ely. It was really cool to have them there. They drove all the way just for that, and then they were doing some genealogy in the library. So
Nevada.
I have got a fan.
I'm sorry. Like Ely, Utah, Ely, Idaho. It sounds like somewhere. I'm sorry.
Ely, Nevada. Okay. It's not Ely. It's Ely.
Ely. I've got a fan from Boise who came all the way down. Her whole family drove down.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. She
How
had
nice
won
is that?
A contest on the website a while ago. And so, yeah, but she drove all the way down for the thing.
Wow.
Cool.
So,
that's great.
You know what? If I was just driving from Boise, I probably would, too. I drove from Harriman.
Because what else
that's
is there to do
bad.
In Boise?
Yeah, it's gotten better. It's gotten a lot better, believe me. Growing up in Idaho.
Yeah, so I was
much more exciting
was just,
place
you know,
to be now.
4-hour drive up, stop at the stinker station, 4 hours back. You know, that was about how it was for us.
I have something I was wondering about. Okay,
yes.
Just so he can tell people that are listening. Okay, we're talking about the counterfeit, but what are you working on now?
What am I working on now? I have got another book that I'm working on now that is unrelated to counterfeit and Winking the Silver. It's unrelated to anything. It is kind of a departure for me in that it... Well, the hard part right now is that it is a female main character, which is just kicking my butt and... That's difficult.
So your wife is helping you a lot.
That she is. That she is.
We've read a couple of authors who've done that before, so I think that you can pull it off.
Yeah, it's coming.
I believe you have it.
You've got the skills.
But it's also third person instead of first person.
Oh.
That's probably different for you, too.
The humor is toned down. It'd probably be about the same level as Counterfeit.
Which is still really good.
Why are they making
That's a bummer to me.
Humor just isn't selling. It is, and that is not...
But if you're not
That's
marketing
bummer,
as humor,
though.
The humor can still be in there.
Well, like, Wake Me When It's Over, it looks humorous, but it's not... Well, it's funny. It's actually incredibly funny.
It
but
is
it's very, it. You know, it's a suspense.
Right.
It's nice to have that suspense, but, you know, you're so involved in everything.
And then there's this wisecrack thrown out, and you're just like, what?
You're laughing. It's like comic relief, but then you get right back into the story, and I really like that.
So I wouldn't have marketed Waiting When It's Over as humorous.
Right, and that's really the problem with... That's why that book didn't sell very well, because it was marketed as humor. The cover is humor, whatever. And even, I mean, national marketing, it's hard to even think of how many...
Humorous novels are there. That's true.
There really isn't much of a genre for
which
it.
It's weird. In the U.S., humor novels, humorists, comedians and stuff, will write nonfiction essay.
Yeah, like a...
Like Bill Cosby will write books. Or Paul Reiser will write books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in England, comedians will write novels. One of the big inspirations for Wake Me When It's Over and Counterfeit is a book by Hugh Laurie, if you're familiar with Hugh Laurie.
It's on your website,
yeah. He's the main character on House.
Yeah.
He's Wooster and Jeeves, a long-time comedian.
What's that mouse movie?
Yes. Stuart Little.
There we go.
Yes. Like, yes.
That one.
But yeah, so he was like a huge inspiration in writing these books because they were funny suspense novels. Or just his main one, The Gunseller. But, and yeah, that's really common in England. But here in America, it just doesn't work as well.
20 years. We seem to be about 20 years behind England anyway. Don't
we? 20? Well, wait a minute. Drugs, that's New York that's 20 years behind England. So by the time it hits us, that's about 30 years.
Yeah, that's true.
So
we're out here in the West. We're out here in the sticks.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, I think that's too bad. Because really, reading Wake Me When It's Over was such a wonderful surprise for me.
Absolutely loved it. Loved it.
You know, and it was too bad that everything worked out the way it did for that book, because it was refreshing. I never read a book like that before.
I hadn't
either. It was wonderful to come across something that wasn't sappy. It was engaging, and it was intense.
And it wasn't predictable.
I mean, soon as Eric went sailing over that railing, I was... I know! You know,
the visual on that was just worth money. I would have loved to have seen that in real life.
Well, and just, red and green, how festive. You know, I mean, it just
don't even think of that. You're like, what?
You know,
that's like frog in a blender joke, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We won't go there. One thing I like about Eric is, I like Eric about as much as I liked Owen.
I agree. I love Eric. Just,
they're just,
referring to Owen and Rachenstein.
Yes. Because we really loved Owen. I mean, Owen,
you guys liked him.
Oh, I loved Owen.
You have to read the second one. Now, he can vouch for how they jump on me when I just don't. They just,
okay. You just love him even more.
No, we're just very enthusiastic. Okay. There's no need for defensiveness.
Whatever.
Enthusiasm.
Whatever.
Anyway, so, Eric is just, and I really like how he seems to have grown in The Counterfeit.
Definitely.
Versus when you first meet him in Wake Me When It's Over.
I wonder if he's fully healed from Wake Me When It's Over when this starts.
But you're right.
He's his wrist. That's right. His knee. You know, the poor guy, he's going to have arthritis.
I'm like,
at
how
30.
Old is he? I know. I was like, how old are they? 22? And this is like,
they're
going to be hurting.
But
later on.
You're right. He's just, he's just a kid going to college, And he's
the Counterfeit, though,
they seem a lot more mature. They it seems like, they weren't immature necessarily in Wake Me When It's Over, but. You all of a sudden switch to this, and you're just like, whoa.
Well, they've never been, going through what they went
through.
It
was so bad for him.
Okay, Rebecca was always mature.
Yeah, Rebecca was always way out mature. Yes, that's true. Let's clarify that.
Eric's 10 years ahead of man.
Eric did grow up in this book. He did.
Yes. No, well, I just, the part where he tackles that dark-haired girl in the alley.
Nicole.
Yes. When she was pointing the gun at Rebecca. I was a good sign to me of where he was at in The Counterfeit versus where they were at Wake Me When It's Over, because they've never
paralyzed
been
fear,
through that. And now they're just like, you got to fight for your life. You've got to do something. And of course, she's aiming a gun at the woman he loves. And he can let that happen. He's got to do something. But it's when he's coming back, he's so scared going down the subway stairs.
I think it's cute. I think I just thought that because you're just like, come on, you've been through this. Just walk down the stupid stairs.
And he's just like, I'd like to see you run down the stairs when you.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. That's true. I don't think I could trot down the stairs.
Hand me that paper right there, because I actually have a couple of questions. Some of these are from Marnie on the LDS Fiction Readers thing. She sent me some suggestions.
Cool.
But this first one.
Okay, are we officially starting the discussion?
Oh, yeah, we did
on
5 minutes ago.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we officially transitioned to the official discussion of the Counterfeit.
Okay, regular listeners go, they're just at it again. We don't officially announce things sometimes. Sometimes we just head dive in and they're like, I guess this is where we are now. Anyway, I have this one. in reading on your website and in your acknowledgments and stuff, you've mentioned that the numerous rewrites of your book before it became The Counterfeit.
Yes,
my first question is, what was it like watching your book change so much from what you originally wrote?
It was fun. It
was it fun? Not frustrating at all?
Oh, horribly frustrating. Terribly frustrating. For background, for people who haven't seen the website, it took me 2.5 years to write this book. On second thought, it took 9 months. And Wake Me When It's Over took less than 6. I'd like to say 4, but I'm not sure exactly.
Wow.
It was fast.
Wow.
And then The Counterfeit just took forever. And it's because, in part because it was a sequel. And it's hard to write a sequel because you want to have... I mean, each book has to have some kind of resolution. And so you have your character arc. And you have your character resolution and your action resolution. And the story's got to wrap up. But then at the same time, there has to be...
continuity.
The next book starts, and you still need to have a good character arc, by which I mean the characters need to change at some point. They have to have some flaw that they overcome, mm-hmm. but it has to be a flaw that's consistent with the first book, and it has to so that it doesn't come out of blue, like all of a sudden they are a smoker or something. But you know what I mean.
I imagine because of the trial that they went through, it probably wasn't too hard being able to put a twist or an addition onto that trial what they were going through before.
Right.
Was that difficult, or did you find that kind of...
You mean as far as plot-wise?
As far as plot-wise, with the characters, because that was something they had to overcome, was suddenly this was resulting from this, and
right.
was that easier?
Well, when I wrote Wake Unit Sober, I never had plotted out... Originally, it was going to be 3 books, but I'd never really plotted out exactly what was going to happen. I knew some stuff. I knew... In fact, if you hand me Wake Unit, it's over there.
Sure.
I knew who Edward was, and sorry if I'm spoiling things, but...
No, we don't worry about that too much.
Sweet. All right. Toward the end of the book, you can tell that there is some inclination of what's going to happen. They're in at the end of the book, and Felix, who's the main bad guy of the first book, and Edward, who is Rebecca's dad... kind of confront each other, and they have a conversation that shows that they knew each other for a long time.
In the airport.
Right, in the airport, kind of facing down, holding guns at each other, and they have a conversation showing that that they've known each other for a long time, and page 241 says, "There are other ways," Edward repeated. You think that ring is going to bring peace to the world? There are other ways. And what he's referring to there is this whole... Everything from this book, which is, if I'm going to spoil things, his plans for world peace through nuclear proliferation. Mm-hmm. So that is his. He's trying to discourage Felix from destroying the economy
because
he has other ways of doing.
I see how that ties in now.
So that was planned, and I knew who Edward was, and I knew what his whole plan was from the beginning. But really. What happened and how he was foiled, that changed a lot.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit how the rewriting process worked for you? Did you just write, submit, they said change, write, submit, they said change?
Hey, wait a second. Didn't you read the first part? If his brother said, holy lame, it
holy
went out.
Holy lame.
No, I'm just wondering, because...
What happens?
Because I'm just wondering, like, especially near the end, I know there's some fine-tuning that goes on and things get changed around.
There was
immense
fine-tuning.
As far as from when you first did it to the middle to the end, I mean, what was the
whole process? Okay,
like,
what
happened? Well, I mean, like, well, not that you don't have to go into the whole process, but just
what
was the?
I'll tell you the big steps.
Okay. Yeah, dude, that's
okay.
We only have a few more.
It went through 14 rewrites.
Holy.
But the first incarnation was a book called Watermark, and that was when I was still planning it to be 2 different books. And the basic plot of Watermark. Was that it followed both Eric as a point of view character and Baxter as a point of view character.
Oh.
Baxter from Wake Unit Sober, who never even is mentioned.
No,
I saw on your website, I had to remind myself, I had to flip back and go, Baxter, roommate.
Exactly. I liked Baxter.
I did too. We didn't talk about
him.
Baxter was cool. And Nicole, from this book, was a big part of that book. Huge part.
Which I read that part on your website when you were talking about how Nicole was going to be initially a love interest for
Baxter.
And then I'm seeing that she's a bad girl.
She changed back and forth a lot.
Was she going to be a bad girl in Watermark?
No, her thing, and just again spoiling stuff, warning, she shot a cop. And what happened is that she was working at a scrapbook store.
I love that scrapbook store.
And she was totally unaffiliated with anything that was going on. And she was just working there, going through school, and just working at a scrapbook store. And shortly after everything happened in Wake Me When It's Over, then they were finding out that Scraptacular was a front for all the counterfeiting.
Which was very appropriate in Salt Lake.
I know, we thought that was pretty funny.
That was like one of the whole inspirations for that book, is I'm like, scrapbooking has to be bad.
Yeah, come on!
Yeah.
But, it can be very bad. If you're talking about waste of money, or spending lots of money.
It's not a waste of money, but just...
I was going to say, don't
it's
buy
a waste,
waste
if you don't use it.
Well, I use
Which is my problem. Anyway, so yeah, that was very good. That was, right. In fact, since we're talking about, if you are,
I'm sure not.
Nicole, finish
I'm not. Oh, okay.
he wasn't even past step one.
That's why I have to write stuff down, because otherwise we never finish thoughts. Right. And there's no resolution.
Oh, good point.
Which is why we would never make good writers. There you go.
That's right.
Okay. So you're talking about the rewriting.
Nicole.
Talk about the rewriting.
She shot a comp, and that has changed many times as to whether she did it or not. In the first incarnation, Watermark, she didn't do it, but she thought she did it.
Oh.
Whereas she was there with the manager who was part of the NOS, Novus Ordo Seclorum.
Right.
And the police came in to raid them. Her, and it makes more sense in the book if you were to read it. But basically, the police come in. She's holding a gun, and the police start shooting police who are undercover. She doesn't realize what it was. Her gun is fired. She doesn't know whether or not she shot a cop. She didn't actually do it.
Okay.
And it was accidental, and it was more self-defense anyway. And
this
so
is the first...
That was the first incarnation. So in that one, the whole second book is her basically redeeming herself in that she is turning state's evidence. She is going to go and collaborate with the FBI... And help them catch NOS people.
This would have been a good book.
It would have been a good book. But it just didn't happen.
How did Rhett get the axe then?
And then she ends up in an antique store.
How did that version
well, for a minute.
Yeah. Not work? Exactly. I mean, like, what did you, why was
the,
that?
The main
changed?
Flaws with that book were three things. The first one was that it was very difficult because I write first person with Eric. And so it was hard to have two first-person characters to have Eric and Baxter.
Right.
And when people would read it, it didn't really work.
Is this
people.
Something that was pointed out after you were done with the manuscript?
No, I never finished that one.
Oh, okay.
So that was a big problem. Second problem was that I really didn't have enough material to make three books. And so it seemed like I was kind of drawing it
stretching.
Out. It was a little watered down. And so I was... always trying to come up with ways to cram it into two books.
I've noticed that with trilogies sometimes, though. Actually.
A lot of times they do that.
They're stretched. I know the Englisher was kind of like that for me.
I agree. There was
filler.
A lot of filler. Leading up to the Brethren.
Yeah, it's...
The Beverly
Hills.
The Preacher's Daughter, the Englisher, and the Brethren.
All about the Amish. It's very interesting.
Check anyway, not to go off on a little tangent, but...
Oh, okay. So first one was point of view.
Right.
That they couldn't get. The second one was that it was too watered down and I was trying to cram it into three books. The third one is that I was halfway through the book and I had a hard drive failure and I lost it.
Don't you know you're supposed to back up?
Oh, he knows now, I'm sure.
I know now, but I still don't do it.
Sorry. I would just die.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It was pretty horrible. I lost everything. I lost... A whole other book that I had written that I had never submitted anywhere.
Is that one you were mentioning that was different?
Yes.
You didn't have any...
I have
like
a paper
anywhere?
Copy of it.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
It would be very hard to revise. But anyway, so I lost it all, which... depression, you know?
Yes,
and
major
then,
depression, yes.
So did you think about giving up then?
Oh, yes. And I rewrote the book so many times that there were many times I was just going to bag it. But anyway, so I got to that point... And I thought, well, I have to rewrite all this stuff anyway. I'll just cram it into two books.
So
that's when I got to Tangled Web.
Tangled Web.
And I was one day, and I was just having all sorts of trouble trying to figure out how to work the book. Because my books are, granted, they're not super realistic in the sense that that people don't really get caught up with terrorists every day. But I try to make them plausible. You know, where, like, yes, this could happen. It probably won't, but yes, it could happen.
But it could.
Exactly.
And so the problem that I had with doing a sequel is you can imagine that people would get caught up with terrorists and gunfights and everything once. But having it happen a second time, that's trouble. And so I was having a lot of trouble. And so I got the idea then to put it on the island, to have it with the Witness Protection Program. Because that kind of made sense as a...
It does.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense.
So that became the second incarnation of the book, which is called Tangled Web. And all these titles are just, I can't title books. So that was called Tangled
Web. That was one of my questions. How do you decide on
it? I don't decide on titles. I didn't even bother titling this one when I sent it to the publisher. I just had it listed as sequel to Wake Me When It's Over. Because the other two books, Wake Me When It's Over and On Second Thought, I didn't name either of them. So.
And so they, your publisher, so is the one that chooses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I give input, but yeah. I don't even bother.
Well, there went my question.
Because I'm not good at naming things. And there's a lot of authors that aren't. Like, Annette Lyon told me she's exactly the same way. Like, she put a title on it just that she knew was really lame, but it didn't matter because she knew they would name it anyway. So,
You know what? Haven't you noticed the titling one is, like, the hardest thing? Well, at least when I was, you know, amateur, I was like, you know, geez, was it An Endless Summer? No, let's see. You know, just stupid stuff. Yeah. It's stupid. It's hard to come up with a really good title.
Yeah.
I mean, and I say that and as if I know, but I mean, just trying to title my essays for crying out loud for school, English class.
Oh, is that expecting you to make some comment four. About Tortoise?
No,
yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of Aragorn. Eldest. It's just like there's, you know,
if you read those are
Aragorn and Eldest.
Oh, I don't care for them.
Oh.
I feel like,
no, they're so good.
I think that they are purely the novelty because he's 17 years old, and I think that they're completely worthless otherwise.
You have to at least read.
No, what those books are, and quite honestly, this is the story with them, they are full, they are riddled with cliches that every fantasy reader reads it, and they're like, holy crap. I've read this 15,000 times. But they are targeted towards people who, like, and for him himself, he's 17. I'm sure he hasn't read all those. So even to him, it's new. He thinks he came up with this great idea. And so people, like the kids who read them, they're like, man, this is awesome. Because they've never read it before. Mm-hmm.
Which would be me, because I don't read that much sci-fi. Or fantasy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course, you read fantasy and you liked it. And so you go against what I was saying. I loved it.
She's like, score one against Rob.
Yeah.
But that is vetoed that because I say score 1-4 him because
he's biased. I'm neutral. I'm
yeah. It's just one of those books you have to read. You just kind of have to read it. I think it's really different from a lot of the stuff. That's
see,
out
okay,
there,
but are you a Lord of the Rings fan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. See, what, so that wasn't obvious.
And then it's over.
Exactly. So we love Lord
well,
of the Rings.
Well, see, that could just
too.
That's just
that's a universal. That's actually universal.
We all love Lord of the Rings.
I like the movie.
But you know, you don't. You can always you can know that without having read the books. Stuff. So I was just wondering if that was something
interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
Well, we were here hoping that we were talking about that. We laughed for a good 20 minutes about that.
So here we are, that was great. Final title, The Counterfeit, final submission, you do a little working, I mean...
Oh, what? Okay, what happened? Tangled Web took place entirely on the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And it was again, because I really liked Nicole, who in that book was named Elisa. For
really?
Other no, she's named Sarah. In Watermark, she was named Elisa. In Tangled Web, she was named Sarah.
Aren't
and
you
in this,
confusing
she was
yourself?
Nicole.
Yes. Changing the characters.
I'm confused.
I know. I'm like, okay, what? Like, what?
Not to be confused with Elisa Kent.
I was gonna say I immediately thought of the flavor.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right. No, she was named Elisa because if you mix up the letters, it's Alias.
Oh,
and
so
and Elisa was a fake name. So
that was good
because
so
she was hiding out.
Kiara. Kiara
right.
In Betsy Brown and Green, it was Erica.
Yes, you were absolutely
an
right.
An anagram.
An anagram.
Yep.
An anagram.
Now spell it.
An anagram.
Yeah, that's really cool. See, you're really good
that
at that
is pretty
kind
cool.
Of stuff.
I wouldn't have
got it.
No.
That's very good.
I didn't get it in Betsy's book.
Yeah.
That was like, oh.
Actually, you just told me that.
There you go.
Ooh.
How dumb am I?
Okay, so she is now Nicole.
She's now, okay, yeah,
so. All on the islands.
It was all in the islands, and it was all mainly focusing on the counterfeiting.
Oh, wait, no, she's Sarah, I mean.
Oh, yes, she's Sarah.
See, now you're
Sarah.
I'm confused.
Holy cow. Anyway, we'll just call her Nicole, because that's who she is.
That's who we know who she is.
That's who
we
ended up to be.
Yes,
yeah.
That's her.
But so she, that book was almost entirely on the counterfeiting, and it had the nukes mm-hmm. in it, but it didn't have anything to do with the Illuminati. Spoiler warning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they weren't even a part of it at all. And,
I like it better with the Illuminati.
So do I
totally. Do, too.
I love it.
I think it's great.
I think it's much better
than
that.
Was Illuminati a real organization?
If you ask
Dan
Brown, it is.
According to
I haven't read any of Dan Brown's
Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons, frequently mentioned
see,
the
you haven't read that yet, have you?
Angel, nope. I don't know.
I haven't read it.
We won't. We already talked about that.
We're not going to that. See, we both read Da Vinci Code. She didn't.
And we both read Angels and Demons too. So.
Well, and you were saying that they kind of wanted you.
Oh, surprise! Okay, sorry.
You were saying that. You were saying in your thing that at one point your publishers asked you to make it more like Da Vinci Code.
They certainly did.
So what did, had you read the Da Vinci Code at that point?
Oh, yeah.
So what did you think when they told you that?
To be honest, actually, I was surprised. I wasn't really thrilled that it was mirroring the Da Vinci Code, actually.
Because she'll be very honest.
I'm sorry, I'll be honest with you.
No,
but it's like everything, whenever there's a popular book comes out, it's like everyone starts mirroring it.
Well, that one made a lot of money.
Well, yeah, but
let me tell you exactly what happened. Wake Me When It's Over, there's the story in there that I think you guys mentioned on the podcast about the Berlin Wall.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that fascinated us.
Yeah, and I really liked that. Everybody who read that, they thought that's really cool. And for you readers, or you listeners, you can look it up. But basically, just a little known fact about history that nobody knows that is just interesting. And so that's what they meant when they told me to go back and make it Da Vinci Code. They didn't want it
to be interesting.
Make it good.
That makes sense.
Interesting.
Right, no.
I have macadamia nut cookie in my mouth. Okay.
What they meant is to take a lot of the little known facts. The French Revolution.
That was interesting. I never would have ever known that if I hadn't read that. Where do you find this information? Like, is there a website or a book you found in the library?
Crazy
or
people. totally.
Conspiracy theorists.
So. Yeah, you can find anything on the internet.
That's true. Unfortunately, that's true.
So I was looking specifically for. I wanted there to be some kind of conspiracy, and so I found. I was reading a book about conspiracy theories.
That was that book from college that you were saying.
Right. It was a book that I found up at the U of U library that was like a very scholarly view of conspiracy theories and where they come from. And so I was reading through that and I got some ideas. It was really interesting.
Because I think
cool.
That's something I wouldn't mind peeking into.
I have read so many books about JFK.
Well, I have some conspiracy theorists in my family. So I'd like to, you know. Read that and just see what the scholars think of it.
It was interesting because it was cool. I chose the Illuminati because of
they're fascinating
because they're real, and that's the thing with them is that they, according to real historians, they really existed. Mm-hmm. They were around, but according to real historians, they only lasted like 25 years.
Oh no, so Angels and Demons, they are still around.
Right. Well, see, Angels and Demons, the Illuminati in there is a different brand.
It is fiction
of Illuminati. Illuminati is just a Latin word that basically means the enlightened ones. And so there have been lots of different little organizations named the Illuminati for a long time.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
So is the information about the dollar bill and everything, is that factual as well? Is that what you got from the Illuminati?
Well, of course.
Historical stuff?
Well, it's proven that the founding fathers were Freemasons. And
National treasure.
As I love that movie. I've not watched the movie.
But, you know, it's hard to say nowadays what's fiction and what's
fact. That's true. And it gets blurred so much.
And I like to know, like, is this something that is just convenient to tie in for the book or movie, or is this a real actual fact?
As far as all the stuff on the back of the dollar, that is real in the sense that it is a real conspiracy theory that's generally accepted by conspiracy theorists.
Okay, but it's not something. Obviously the symbolism is there, and it means,
the symbolism is there, and it means, like, for example, the unfinished pyramid means that the United States is unfinished and there's still more work to do, and then the eye is the eye of providence. But then all the stuff about how there being 13 levels of stone means the 13 ranks of the Illuminati and that kind of thing. Is
that based on the conspiracy thing?
That is, yes. Okay. That is, people think that's real.
Wouldn't that have maybe 13 original colonies, maybe?
Well,
that's what it says in the...
That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That was, what, chapter 20?
Chapter 20. Yeah, I bet you're right. Chapter 20. I don't know.
I underlined some things, too. Isn't that just bad?
That's
what the teacher does.
Well, no,
I just like
the words.
Oh,
different.
It looks like chapter
21? 19? I know it's somewhere around
probably
here.
Probably 21.
I'm not even bothered to look because
I don't remember. I read this at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I know what it says.
I wrote the thing.
Yeah.
I don't need to go back.
But yeah, so that is supposedly real.
Mm-hmm.
I made up a lot of stuff. I made up a lot of things tying things together. But yes, it is supposedly real. And the stuff with the French Revolution is supposedly real in that the Illuminati supposedly incited it.
It took place. A good point, though, when you say the commoners were the ones that revolted, but they couldn't read.
Right.
That never even occurred to me. It was like, duh, of course they wouldn't be able to read. Yeah.
Boy, the uneducated masses.
We just assumed that they could read.
We never wanted to occur to me that they would even need to. Most amazing police videos, and they get the riots going, and they're all doing stupid stuff, and you're like, hello, what are you thinking? Would you really just go up to some car and tip it over?
They're sheep. They follow each
other. Unless you were in a crowd.
They're sheep.
I don't know. So I guess, you know, you get a bunch of people together and they just feed off of each other.
They
and I personally don't understand that. But there is a whole, you know, study on crowd mentality and everything. There's a whole...
You know what? It goes back to the animal kingdom. When the buffalo, they'd all start stampeding
we're
together.
We're not buffalo.
And
hello!
It's the same thing. They'd all go over the cliff. You know, they'd all go over the cliff together.
I'm not saying it to you. I'm saying it to all the stupid people in the riots. It's
theoretically.
Like, are you... Do you really... I hope
they've proven it to be true with buffalo.
Yeah. Well, if you, you know, if you watch yourself on the news after, do you feel proud of yourself? You know, now you're getting tear-bombed. Woohoo! I don't know, but that's a very good point. Yeah. You know, that's something that I hadn't thought of was, yeah, well, they couldn't read who it was. And there were all these writings or everything. You read about that in history books, but you don't really think about the fact that they couldn't read.
Which makes you think then in terms of, I mean, I thought, and I'm like, well, what about the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia? Like, how much of that is conspiratory? And, you know, and what
don't
about,
you think
I mean,
you
could just start going
behind
down all of, I mean.
Every revolution, there has to be some type of conspiracy.
Well, there we go
it.
Into the monocausationalism.
Oh, yeah, spell that one.
I had that one underlined.
C-A-I-O-N-A-L.
I
loved
spelling
that
word. ISM. The queen.
I forgot
well
about
done.
ISM.
Well done.
I don't even know if I spelled that right. I was just throwing stuff out there.
Well, I wasn't listening, so we're good.
I told you I could find it.
No, it's fine. Okay. Anyway.
But yeah, so that's where that all came from, is that was the Da Vinci Code-esque part of the book. Was not... There, I mean, there's only one place where there's, like, a puzzle, and it's not even an important thing. But yeah, there's a little anagram in there.
Yeah,
that's
like
that.
But that's just in there so just cool. for kicks.
And I like the word that he tried to come up with.
I'm like, what? Pa unifies Tim, but Tim is a single person. He's already unified, so that's what makes
sense. It's just like...
Well, I love, and this is totally off subject, but I love, in Wait Me When It's Over, he just names people. He doesn't know their names. So
oh, right.
Names.
Like, Wolf Coat.
Smells like bananas, and what was the other
one? Oh, you know
what?
They started talking about David here, and I was all, who?
I know, I'm like,
but
Dave's
then when
here,
he says,
like,
I thought of him as Wolf Coat. I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Wolf Coat, Banana Man, that's right. Okay.
That was great. How did you ever think of that?
Wolf Coat?
Just because he eats lots of bananas.
Don't
and
wears a wolf coat.
See, stuff like that.
See, that was the old Eric, and I was back in my comfort zone when he started naming, what was it, Genghis and the other guy. And he starts naming the people,
the
and you're
Mongol
just like...
Horde.
And I just went, oh, okay, there's the Eric I know. All right, okay. All right.
No, you know what? So, there were some really intense parts in this book, but since we were just talking about different characters and everything, you know, we could ask the general, where did you get the inspiration for...
Oh, that's a
such a so-and-so or whatever. But I'm just wondering, I think I'm just going to skip right to the... You mentioned that Rebecca is your favorite character.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah, we want to know.
There are probably...
Or better yet,
a couple of people. I know that these two weren't particularly... And I was, you know, but I liked Rebecca well enough, I guess. But we just...
Oh,
really,
I liked her. I just liked
her. I felt like
better.
I wanted
that's
to
all.
Know her yeah. more.
That's what I felt.
Referring to Wake Me When It's Over.
Wake Me When It's
Over.
Well,
she was very withdrawn. And, like, Eric laid it out on the table. You knew who he was, and
you loved him.
Well, we're
and you liked
through Eric's point of view.
Yeah, we are. That's true.
But in this one, Rebecca seems to just... come out and
you get to know
more.
Her.
I really yep. She came out in this one.
There's a lot of inner strength too in this
so,
one. I like that.
I'm just wondering what makes her your favorite. Like, what is it about her that makes you favor her so much?
I like her very much because she is. There is so much going on, and so whether and I think that it's horrible.
You mean
that,
like with her dad and with everything, or just I mean
I
that, that
sorry
she
for
is
her
so
with
conflicted?
All that. Oh my god!
That in the first yeah. book, in the first book, it is. She is always trying to do the right thing in both books. Mm-hmm. She has a very strong moral compass, mm-hmm. and she's always trying to do what's right. But at the same time, she has in that book, it's not so much even recognizing that her father is a terrorist as recognizing he's just a bad father.
Exactly.
That she's mm-hmm. never wanted to admit to herself before, although everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. Like her whole family, they know that he's a bum. And
a very rich bum.
And in that book, I mean, all that she really wanted was a dad. And then in this book, it's even more so because it's realizing that
he's not just a bum.
He's not just a bum. He's a really bad guy.
He's a terrorist bum.
Right. And so even through this book, she doesn't want to call him a terrorist. And she doesn't
refuses to call him a terrorist, actually.
Yeah. She doesn't even want to call him a criminal. Like, because, yes, he saved their life. And so she holds on to those things. And I just think that's so much more interesting than the other characters. Just that she has so much more of an emotional...
personal conflict thing.
Conflict, yeah. Whereas Eric, he's basically just trying to survive. He's trying to maintain the status quo. He's trying to
get her to marry him.
And so his conflict is more physical survival and that. And then of course there's the romance, but basically that is he knows that that's not a huge deal at the time in Wakeman It's Over because the romance is secondary to not dying. And so, but with her, it's an emotional. A deep, long-standing, her whole life.
Which is why
it was a fraud.
Which
is
why it was there. Why they there was that pause when he proposed to her, and things turned out the way they did. When she was like, "No, I have to think. I have to think."
Right.
Because I mean, come on, they love each other and they're good for each other. I mean, they're gonna end up together sometime, I guess. But. You know, then when she doesn't even remember,
I felt bad for her.
She can't remember. She said yes, and then when he tells her what happened, she's like, "Oh, why did I just say yes?" You know, but things were different then. Yeah. 3 weeks or however long they were at it, it made a difference.
And, I felt so bad things, for her. But, I'm like,
oh you know, I read
everything goes wrong.
I read the last half of this book feeling like I couldn't breathe. I felt so bad for her.
Oh, her lungs, even just. Oh, I was like, if I got asthma all of a sudden, like, is it.
I know, try to breathe deeply.
No, it's reading induced asthma.
I guess myself having to take a breath.
I agree.
I hold my
especially
breath.
When they're in the catacombs.
Oh, I could not breathe through that. That bothered me. Really? Oh,
I had a hard time breathing when I was down there.
Ooh, when I was down there with them, I had a hard time breathing.
What was the whole deal with that whistle call? Was that Jeff? Or not Jeff?
It was the squeaky bike.
It was the brakes on his bike.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious?
I was thinking, Felix followed him down. That's how they're calling to the other guy. I'm like, no! Yeah. Then they're trapped. You know, I'm like, no!
You know, I just thought it was just freaky because you don't know what's down there.
And it's so dark. Like, I'm just like,
I couldn't stand that.
No, I would never make it.
Spiders and mice and
I've
rats.
I've seen Fear Factor. I know what's in those cars.
I know
those things. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. The part that grossed me out the most is when Eric fell into
that
the
water.
This is a description of it, and it's kind of.
I know.
I was just like,
you should find
it. I was
fine.
You know what? They were wet, like the whole book.
I know.
I'm just like, that would just be horrible to be wet.
And cold.
And cold.
It's amazing Rebecca didn't get pneumonia.
How did she not get pneumonia?
That's true.
But you know what? The whole catacombs thing, it didn't bother me until he fell in the water. Then after that, I felt something. But before
the bone climbing over.
You liked that?
That was after the water.
Okay, after the water. That's right.
Yeah. But I just, no. Ugh. So is there a second favorite?
A second favorite character. I love the catacyclist.
Yeah.
You know, he plays such a small part in the book, but he's so memorable.
Okay, now tell me. How did he come about?
This is the cool thing about him. I didn't make him up.
What?
In that, when I was researching this stuff, there's a whole group of people called Urban Explorers. That the cataphiles are a type of urban explorer. And basically what they do is they just like to go and investigate things that are... Yeah, like go into abandoned buildings or go into to mines or sewers or whatever and just look around.
Delightful. Yeah. See what's there, find dead bodies,
But so this is a huge kind of subculture.
Witness mugging. Uh-huh.
And they have like a magazine called... I think it's called Urban Explorers. But there was an article that I read in there about a guy who was from America, and it was kind of his supposedly a true story that he wrote that he came from America. He was in Paris for a week, and he hooked up with some. He was an urban explorer in America, and so he hooked up with some cataphiles that he met on the internet. And he went down, and so I got a lot of the stuff from the book from that guy's description from that magazine article. But one thing that the cataphiles who were his guides told him about the catacyclist. That is kind of a myth to them. Like, no one has seen him, but they all have a friend of a friend who's seen him.
I love it!
And, yeah, and so maybe he's real, probably he's not, but I thought he was just so cool.
I just couldn't figure out how a guy could ride the bike in the dark. That's what I'm just like.
He had a light.
I know.
What, his bin?
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I thought was the character that you, I mean, he might be based on someone who is someone, a friend of someone has seen, but the way you portrayed the way he says things, and
I thought it was funny.
He's one of those people that you kind of need to trust, but you're not can't too really sure trust,
how
what you
how much he's
really,
crazy and how
exactly.
much
exactly
yeah.
I remember really reading that the first time about. I read it. I remember thinking, okay, should they trust him? Should they just get away from him as fast as they can? Because I was suspicious right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
I just was.
I'm surprised they weren't more suspicious. Seriously,
I would have been. But I'm just. I would have been more suspicious.
I wasn't suspicious. It's just kind of like,
go away.
It's kind of weird.
No, but he becomes endearing. Mm-hmm. It, the, you know,
he kind of grows on you.
He does.
Yeah. And at that point, they've met cataphiles that helped them, mm-hmm. and so that kind of helps. But the main thing is more that they are just completely desperate at that point.
Yeah.
And so, and I knew that it was hard for them to trust people, and so I was just trying to make it as bad as possible. So, I mean, right there before they meet him is when she kind of freaks out and she starts running uh-huh. through the catacombs, and
the panic attack gets surrounded by all those bones.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There really are bone parts.
Yeah, 6 million people's worth of bones.
Yeah.
Because they were. Paris was too small, and they were having.
Cemeteries were too small, so they did the same thing they did in England, bringing up bones and somewhere else. Yeah.
And they had quarried underneath Paris for other reasons because they needed stone, mm-hmm. And so. They said, well, we have these quarries, let's just put
them there. Yeah, that is
this world. And then people put, like, you know, crosses made out of skulls and things like that.
Yeah.
Is that real, too?
Yeah, I mean, and if you go to my website, there will be all these pictures. I'm going to post them on the
wall.
Some maps of the catacombs, and then also some pictures of the bones.
Just a visual
on
that part.
You can go on a tour in Paris. You can go on a tour and go down into, the clean... I mean, not clean, but like, they're really well taken care of, the touristy part of the catacombs, and see all the bones.
Ooh.
But there's all these other...
And speaking of the catacombs...
I wish you
places.
Could see Hillary's face right now.
That's funny. But you brought something with you.
I did,
speaking
which
of catacombs,
our
which
readers,
we,
our viewers can't see.
Well,
our listeners can't see.
Wannabe viewers, since I'm sure you would love to see this.
Right.
It's a big old map.
There have been maps made of the catacombs for lots and lots of years, because some of them go back into the 1700s. And so there's old quarry maps, and then there's maps of where the cemeteries were, and like the individual parishes would keep track of where they put
the
bodies.
Is that
what
the plaques were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's also other stuff. There's, on the map you can see there's... the German bunker that's mentioned in the book.
Oh,
that's really cool.
That is so
There's
cool.
another series of catacombs that were the headquarters of the French Resistance in World War II. That's where they were based.
So
in the catacombs, and so, but it's mostly just basements and sewers and everything that are all
really wanna...
this big. It's 300 miles of tunnels. And
so I don't know how it can support the weight of the city when there's that much tunneling.
Well, you heard about the Arc de Triomphe. They cemented under it because of the catacombs.
Right.
Oh.
Which is all bull, but...
That's why I was like, I don't know. That fit really a little too
but
well
yes,
into
it
the
is...
story.
I guess I fell for it.
On the that, see...
That's
the thing, is that there's
like
little known history, and then there's also the stuff I make up.
Right.
But
so we just don't know.
That's why I told you that you
don't
know.
Now I don't
know
if I
can
trust anything else, he says.
Too late.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, if you look at this map, and I'll link to it on my website, robisonwells.com. And I keep pointing to it. I'm like talking to the computer.
That's okay.
But yeah, I'll link to it there. But you can see on it, there are little places where it says... This was a really pretty gallery of the catacombs, because people go down in there and they like there's statues and there's carvings and stuff, and so on the map it'll say this was really pretty, but it was filled in 2002.
They have pictures on it, so you can see what it looked like before they filled it in.
There are some, but because it's illegal to go down there, then there aren't a lot. But
it is illegal to go into the catacombs except for where the tourists
except for the tourist part, yeah.
Really? Even the people, the pedophiles and stuff, they are...
Oh, they're all illegal? Breaking the law. Yeah, if you think about it, you can see why it's totally bad. In
it's dangerous in places.
It's dangerous, it can hurt you, but, I mean, if there was a series of tunnels underneath a major city and a terrorist got in there with a big bomb...
Oh, so bad.
So yeah.
Nobody get any ideas, okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like all of our listeners are terrorists.
Wait a minute, But yes, the Arc de Triomphe mentioned in the book, that's all baloney.
Even that, with it being in the circle and everything.
That is true. And basically what I found is that I had three symbols, which were the Owl of Minerva, mm-hmm. and then the Black Sun, which is a circle with a dot in the center.
Right, right.
And then the 12-pointed star, which is a sign of the
with
zodiac.
With the little dots in the middle.
Only when it's with the Black Sun. But yeah. And so those are real symbols of the Illuminati.
Okay.
And the 12-point star is a symbol of lots of conspiracy right. groups. Mm-hmm. And so I was basically just trying to find things that fit, and the Arc de Triomphe just worked.
Wow,
and,
I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's and good. So it...
how convenient.
Yeah, it worked out very nicely.
Are there any tunnels under the Arc de Triomphe?
All of the maps that I found of the tunnels are on the south side of the river, mm-hmm. and that is on the north side of the river. So,
well, that would make sense.
I would imagine.
I wonder if they just don't map those because it's like Area 51 or something.
No,
in Paris.
The Area 51 Paris. Oh my word.
Wow. Okay, so
well, I guess they do have to, you know, beam people up from everywhere, right?
Exactly, America. Not just here.
Well, going back to the technical part of it for a minute. Mm-hmm. I am curious to know if you write chronologically or if you just write scenes and then kind of tie them together.
I write in... I have ideas for scenes, and I outline the book, and then I write from the beginning.
Beginning to end. Okay.
Yeah, and so all my books have been based on like four or five scenes where, with Wake Me When It's Over... I knew that I wanted it to have the evil scrapbook company, and I knew that I wanted it to have...
That reminds me of Mobsters and Mormons. That's what it is.
Mobsters and Mormons.
I haven't seen that one.
Well, they end in Hawaii with a scrapbook store.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's what makes it so funny. I'm just like,
that's awesome.
So you had the scrapbook store.
At the scrapbook store, the and evil I'm trying to think of what else I had in that one that I had planned. I had lots of other stuff planned. I can't remember there. The economic terrorism. So basically, I start with all these, like three or four ideas, mm-hmm. and then I try to fit the book around them, and make it fit. And then I'll outline the whole thing with a rough outline, and that's actually something else I'm going to post. You can see I'm going to post my original outlines for both Watermark and Tangled Web.
I like that. That will be good.
But
that's very good.
So I'll outline the whole book, and then I'll write five chapters, and then I'll re-outline the book. Because so many good ideas come when you're actually writing it.
That's true.
And so I'll do five chapters, and then I'll re-outline with the new stuff. And then I'll do five more chapters, and then re-outline them. Which makes it sound more orderly than it is, because it's not.
What is the longest session that you've ever sat down and just written? I mean, an hour, 2 hours? Just curious.
So it depends.
I have a full time job, and so.
Exactly, so.
And so I write when I can, but in the crunch time, Counterfeit, this version of the Counterfeit was written start to finish in a month.
Oh,
as was the first version of Tangled Web. Yeah, like I said, it took 2.5 years to write the whole thing, but when I decided to rewrite it and start from scratch, took a month. And so during that time, I'm writing, like, if I have the day off, I'll take vacation, or I'll work on Saturdays or whatever, and if I set aside the day, I will write from 7 in the morning till 9 at night.
Wow.
Pound through it.
Well,
it's easier that way, like, because it's hard, like, the first hour you're writing, it's hard to get in the groove.
It's kind of like if you're going to scrapbook. You need a scrapbook for
three or four
hours.
Yeah. That's what we scrapbook.
So it takes you an hour just to get
that's
stuff
true.
Out and figure out what you're going to do, and then it's time to put it away.
Yeah.
So does your wife leave with your kids?
Or does she just
usually close the door.
Try to keep them from banging on the door.
Yeah, she's very good to me.
What a good supportive
wife.
Yes,
definitely.
Holy cow, she is long-suffering.
That's awesome.
So, like,
Aaron, it sounds like you are loved.
She is.
That's great.
That's awesome.
You know she's going to probably listen to this.
Find out why I'm staying out so late.
There's nothing going on. Just a lot of talking.
We're just sitting here.
But,
eating cookies.
Yeah, so that's... just sit down and...
You had a question real quick, didn't you?
About...
No, that was my question.
Oh, okay. No, I was curious about the titles that he explained about how he chose the titles.
Well, and I have a question about locales, because in Wake Me When It's Over, it was kind of... I mean, some of it took place in Charlie Square, which I know pretty well because my father-in-law has a store there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent a lot of time in Charlie Square. And then there were different, you know, places, and mainly it took place in Salt Lake.
Right.
So those of us that live here are like, yeah!
Yeah, we can... But see, I don't remember reading any other books that take place in Charlie
Nothing
Square.
Nothing ever takes
so
place in Salt Lake.
Because
Charlie
Square is just kind of its own unique little, you know, out-of-the-way, eccentric place that not a whole lot of people go to.
Right.
Except for the really rich people, and my father-in-law sells to them, and they buy. But I'm just wondering how it was writing for Salt Lake versus San Juan Islands, Paris, England.
Exactly.
It was...
the second one.
It was purposeful. I did it on purpose. I went to a book signing, and it was for my first book, actually, but it was after Wake Me When It's Over. It was already in at the publisher, and it was working on coming out. But I was signing my first book, which takes place in New Mexico, and I was signing it, and they were saying, some lady came in, and I actually got this several times. They came in, and they said... Oh, it's in New Mexico. That's great. I'm so sick of LDS fiction that takes place in Utah.
Oh,
I'm
like, really?
Oh, crap. Because my next one all takes place in Utah. And so...
Oh.
And so...
They don't all take place in Utah. See, Carrie Blair has written some in Arizona and things like that. But you
And Betsy Brennan's all in
Georgia.
I have to admit, there is a fair amount of LDS fiction that takes place in the Provo Valley.
In Provo, especially... Like the first that came out.
I just,
yeah.
A lot of
that's
us.
True. That's
and I was
BYU
like,
you
know,
campus.
I haven't really been down there. I don't know much about Provo, you know, and all that stuff. I know more about Salt Lake. So it was nice to read about
Salt Lake. Not just Utah,
versus,
but Salt Lake.
You know,
yeah,
right.
I have to
Orem
say that was nice,
and
actually.
Provo and everything. But there is a fair amount that happens in Utah, actually.
Yeah.
I just started reading your first book the other night.
Oh, again? Oh,
cool. I'm only like in the chapter two, but it's real good.
I know. I still have not read that yet. I have it.
You need to read.
I got it from the library.
On second thought.
I have it at home.
I have to read it.
Yeah.
It's very.
Didn't even dawn on me.
I like the character. He's another character.
That one is very different because that is not a serious book at all.
It's absolutely funny
for the sake of funny. Yeah, it did really well. And, very good springboard. It's very similar to Robert Farrell Smith's books, and I make no bones about that. It was my first book, and I wrote it with no intention of it being published. And it's very much, while it's not plagiarism by any means, it is a book about a fish out of water story in a small town in New Mexico.
Oh, so nothing to do with Baptists and barbecue.
Nothing at all.
I started reading one of Robert Farrell Smith's books.
They are pretty fun.
I didn't get very far into it.
Which one did you read?
It's been a few months back. I can't remember. But I just remember thinking, I think I'd like to read Robinson Wells again. It's not a fair assessment because I have not actually finished front to back one of his books. But I just remember thinking that because I read you first.
Right.
That it was kind of interesting reading his stuff.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It was kind of, you know, because I guess it's like when you see a certain actor in a certain movie and it's the first time you've ever really seen them. And then you see one of their older movies and you just can't
place it.
You know, you're just still thinking, you know, like Frodo. Instead of whatever, you know, just
right.
like something. You know,
right.
like... No, and so it's like I got spoiled on this. It's like if you watch, you know, the old Star Trek first, and you grow up with it, then you kind of can't ever get into the Next Generation.
No, I don't know.
I don't
have
any idea.
I got into all of them. Sorry.
They're probably bad examples, but I guess it was just I was too fresh off of reading Wake Me When It's Over. I wasn't ready to go into someone else's. But I want to go back and read his stuff because I've heard good stuff.
He honestly was the number one biggest influence on me in writing books because I went on a mission to New Mexico, and he owned the LDS bookstore there, which is...
Oh, really?
It's now a Deseret Book, but at the time it was Sunrise Bookstore. And so every time I was in Albuquerque, we'd go in and we'd talk to him, and he'd hold the contest for the missionaries.
How fun!
So I knew him really well, and so I read all his books, and And so when I wrote my first book, it was very much in his style, because, like I've said, I don't have like a huge background in LDS fiction.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, did you know you were going to write? Is that something you always wanted to do?
No, not at all.
Or is that just something that suddenly you're like, hey, I could write?
No, not even that. No, and this story is also on my website, but it's, I never wanted to be a writer. I hated English in high school.
Oh.
And just couldn't stand it. Hated reading. Hated, like, I bluffed my way through reading all the books in English in high school. Or not even Cliff's Notes. It's more I just didn't read the book. I'm like, hey, what happened in chapter 3? And I got bad grades.
True confessions here.
Yeah. I wish I could have
don't follow in
obscure.
My footsteps.
That's right.
You might become a good writer.
Right.
There you go.
But my brother always wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And he was, when I came home from my mission, he was at BYU doing an English editing degree. Mm-hmm. And all his friends wanted to be writers. So
did they have a little group like
J.R.R. Tolkien
group. Had?
Mm-hmm. And one day I was watching a documentary, a World War II documentary, and it sparked this idea for a book. And so I went to him and I said, hey, this would be a cool idea for a book. You ought to write this book. And he said, well, you know, I'm working on something else. Why don't you write a couple chapters and come down to my writing group?
Wow.
I'm like, okay, whatever. And so I did. And I worked on that book. And it was a fantasy book. Kind of a epic fantasy war. It was stupid. Like, horribly, horribly stupid.
You could probably get it published.
Oh, no. That's actually another thing that I lost in the...
Oh, darn.
What was it?
So I don't have that anymore.
We all have our very first stupid...
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have talked about yours before.
There's a folder in a box downstairs I can't wait to remove.
It was pretty bad. So bad. In fact, because I didn't know how to write at all. I had never taken a creative writing class, never... paid attention in English. And so I went and I would go and I'd give them like 2 chapters a week and they would just tear it apart. Just because these guys
were,
it was not
to your self-esteem.
I love it. Like, because they were there not as a writing support group, but as a group of authors who were very professionally wanted to write as for a living. And so they knew their stuff, for one thing. They're all very, very smart. Very, very good writers. And they also just, like, you weren't there to for them to say, good job writing. It was,
keep
you
working
were,
on it.
To
yeah,
be critiqued. It was...
They were there to say, this is what's wrong with your book and how you need to fix it. And so, but anyway, so I would write as I went. It's not like I had everything written and then I'd send them, like, 2 chapters and the next 2 chapters. And so I would write 2 chapters, send it to them, go down... And they would tear it apart, and they said, you know, this isn't working, this character's not working, this plot's not working. And then I would write the next 2 chapters, and I would write those 2 chapters as though I had revised the first 2.
Oh.
And so it was never in a format where anyone could read it. Because because the chapters didn't match up.
Crappy, a little less crappy, a little less crappy, a little
well,
less...
Well, not only quality, but like, the story didn't match.
It made no sense.
Yeah.
Suddenly the character wasn't there anymore.
Right, well, exactly. Actually, I got halfway through it, and one of the main characters... Everyone kind of agreed that the story wasn't going anywhere, and so I had him shoot himself in the head, and just to write him out of the book. And he's
gone
for no reason. But so I just wrote him out. But it was very good for me in that it taught me how to write. But it also I wasn't. They were all writing fantasy, and I was writing fantasy, but I didn't read a lot of it. I read some, but I didn't read a lot of it. But I was only writing it because that's what they were writing. And so then I decided to do the old write what you know, and that's when I wrote on Second Thought.
Did they read that?
They read it, but I didn't do that through their writing group.
Okay, I have a question. How many of their books have
I
been
was
going to
ask that question. That's
is that a good question?
That is a
Brandon
good question.
Sanderson was in the group, who was just published. He has a book out with Tor, which is the biggest... fantasy.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a fantasy one
for me. Fantasy publisher.
Yeah.
His first book was Elantris, and it came out a year and a half ago. Second book is called Mistborn, just came out in July.
I haven't read
he,
those.
Is he getting good reviews?
Excellent. He was just nominated for... I can't remember what the name of the award is. The biggest... fantasy award.
My brother writes more fantasy.
Yeah, you'll have to write it.
And then he's just signed a deal. Sanderson. And he's just signed a deal for $4 with Scholastic for young adult.
Really? Oh,
wow. Yeah, the young adult fantasy market is just
really big. Really big.
So he is, I mean, he's writing full time now. He's
excellent.
He's making money. No one else yet in the group has been published. A couple other guys. My brother in there, he's got $2 right now with an agent. Mm. But
fantasy?
They're all... his books are weird. his books are awesome. They're really good, but they're strange. And so, like, his first one is a horror comedy.
What?
It's that awesome.
Sounds very interesting.
It's really good, but it's weird. And then his other book is a young adult. It's also horror, but it's a young adult horror. So. Okay.
And isn't it amazing? Look at here he sits with 3 published books. What he's starting another one. I mean, talking about you. Isn't it amazing? You know, the one that was getting...
The one that was
critiqued.
They're probably me intending to write for National Market and everything, and I imagine it's probably a longer time.
Brandon got signed on almost the same time I did, but within just a couple months. Mm-hmm. But the LDS market, they run books through faster. So on second thought, it took a year to get through. His first book, Elantris, it took like 2.5 years from acceptance to publish. Just because
there's probably so
it takes
many
a lot longer on the national.
Be harder to get break into the national.
I imagine it probably would. Boy, I have no hope.
Which
is okay, because I'd rather just read and talk about the books, actually.
I don't have time. I barely finish the books every month, much less write my own.
Yeah, it's fun.
Can you imagine how long it would take me to write about
I'm curious. Okay, there's a couple of questions here before we finish up, because we're going on 10:30. I was wondering if you have a favorite, or one that was the most fun to write out of the 3 books you've written. And also, is there a scene from The Counterfeit that was inspired by your real life?
That's a good question. My favorite book is The Counterfeit.
Was that the most fun to write?
Most fun to write. It was very hard to write, but it's hard to say what was the most fun, because none of them were fun. Like, you enjoy...
Not even Wake Me When It's Over was fun?
No, because, like, it's hard to say what's fun, because, I mean, you're just sitting at a computer, and so, like, you can analyze how much you liked it, but when you work on the same thing for 9 months straight, that's the hard thing with writing. And
is
I honestly
like when you're
this.
Ready to give birth, just get this kid out of me.
Totally. Well,
you're like, just get this book out.
Once it goes through the editing process, once it goes through the editing process, and you're waiting for it to be released, But when you're writing it, I mean, I don't think it's
so. Is it fun for you to write? Do you enjoy writing?
I love it.
Is that why you endure all that horrible sitting in front of the computer, boring stuff?
No, I love it, but it's just hard to categorize as fun. That's
okay. Well, which one did you enjoy writing the most? I guess.
See, and it's even hard to say that. Because let me just tell you, it's when you write a book, it is just. All that writing a book is thinking, and sometimes you write stuff down. And so, like I'm writing the other book, like, right now, and I've been writing it all day. But it just, because I've been thinking about it. And that is what I think is the funnest part of writing, is just that
you
live in this little fantasy
world. When you get in front of the computer, I would think about stuff, and then I'd
just
hope you remember it. You just don't know how. Do you carry, a voice recorder to remember things?
I just jot down notes once in a while.
Where was that posted?
So it's hard to say what you enjoyed thinking about more, is what I'm saying. If all that a book is just really thinking about something and making it work. It's
Did you enjoy doing the research for the San Juan Islands?
I loved
your family?
It was awesome. Yeah, and I mean, I enjoy just reading the books to do the research for this. And I'm very much enjoying doing the research for the next one that... Oh, I didn't even say what the next one's about.
No,
we didn't. We got distracted.
You were saying about the...
Oh, did I get distracted?
I don't know. We all did, apparently, because one of us...
The next book is about... Yeah, it's from a female point of view, but it is about Atlantis.
Really?
It is... It is modern-day archaeology. Non-fantasy. Non-fantasy, and
is
it
more
is
like an adventure.
Very much adventure, still a lot of conspiracy. The basic premise is that I've always thought that it's interesting how much the Atlanta story mirrors the Book of Mormon story in that it is a group of people that were away on their own little... They were taken away. They prospered greatly. They became wicked, and the gods destroyed them. And so I've often thought, I mean, and I've been thinking about this since I first read Atlantis, like when I was 10, is that what if it was like another group, like the other sheep I have, which are not of this fold? So not like I'm saying it was the Book of Mormon, but what if it was a real place that was just another group that went off? And so the premise of the book is that the main character is an anthropologist, or a would like to be. She is an archaeologist, BYU, and does her undergrad and her master's there. But she is very much into this idea that Atlantis was a real place. Hey, I've never told anyone this. Just so you this is exclusive. I haven't even told my wife this.
Well, are you comfortable with saying
sure,
this?
Sure, why not? No one's going to steal my idea because it's lame. but anyway, so what she does is... she is very much into this idea. She's an anthropology student. That there is a tie between Book of Mormon archaeology and Atlantis archaeology.
I like
but
this.
Wow, because, that's interesting. But because Atlantis is so taboo among archaeologists, she can't go anywhere to continue her studies because no schools will accept her. And so she's stuck working. She's teaching anthropology at like a community college, and she's really trying to pursue this. And then events unfold where people come, because she is like the only...
out of the woodwork.
She's kind of the only expert on... They're basically what happens is there is evidence that other researchers find that ties the Atlantis myth to Mesoamerica.
Wow.
And so they come to her because she's the only one who has published any articles on the topic. That is the premise of the book.
The premise. Now, if it's anything like The Counterfeit, it's not going to be anything like that when it comes out. But that's what you're starting with, right?
Exactly. I haven't started writing it yet. But yes,
that sounds like a fun
okay,
book.
Okay, so eventually we're going to go find some people like this and go to Atlantis and...
No.
Oh, come on! See, I love to time travel.
That is the one thing that I'm trying to do with this book is, like, Clive Cussler, if you guys ever read Clive Cussler, he writes totally outlandish archaeology action adventure with crazy stuff. And so what I'm going for more with this book is very real, again, plausible, not realistic.
Right.
But plausible, so the archaeologists act like archaeologists, not like Indiana Jones. I mean, there's no supernatural, there's no anything. It is, and they are, and I won't tell you anymore. But
going to be a love interest here somewhere? Are you going to hear
possibly, but that is undecided currently. Mostly because I have a really hard time thinking of romance from a girl's point of view.
That's okay.
For me, it's easy for me to think like, "Ooh, Rebecca, she's cute," but then like for me to think, "Ooh, Tom, he's dreamy." That's difficult for me.
All the women are rolling their eyes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
No, it's not really. All I can say about the difference of men versus women is, as far as a woman concerned, is tenderness is more important than. You know, feeling treasured and tenderness is more important than the other stuff.
Yes. I also think someone that you can just talk to. You know what? If you can talk to your man and talk that.
And he actually validates who you are.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what? Important. To me, that's a good man.
It doesn't matter about all of that other stuff. Just if I feel like treasured and validated, that's good.
Yep.
Maybe that'll help you.
Right.
Does that help you at all?
Aaron's like,
You know him.
Okay, well, I think that's all of the questions I have. I'm just wondering...
Can I just tell about one of my favorite parts?
Yeah, go ahead. And then I want to know what your favorite scene is.
Let me just... I know this part is go just ahead. Really silly. It was a silly part, but being a preschool teacher, it just touched my little preschool teacher funny bone. When he swallows the bug. Do you know what you swallowed? Like a bee, maybe, but I don't think it stung me. A fly, maybe.
Was it big?
I don't know why he swallowed that fly. Perhaps he'll die. I mean, we sing that song in preschool. Yeah. So like I said, it just touched little, my little laughing. Funny bone, but he's so funny. He's just...
Well, good.
I told you my... mentioned to you guys what made me laugh about that part. No? Okay.
Oh, yes, you did.
Did I tell you?
You told me.
I was reading it, and he swallowed the bug, and I was like, ha, ha, ha,
she
ha,
called me.
I
used to tell me.
And I told my husband, I'm like, you know, it's so funny. I love Eric. He's such a guy. And I said, he'll never tell Rebecca.
Rebecca.
I know where I got Erica from. Oh, from Betsy.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
He'll never tell Rebecca that he swallowed the bug. I mean, it's just not what a guy does, right? And then the next page in the little manuscript, because it's on the same page in the book, he tells her that he swallowed the bug, and I laughed so hard. My husband was worried I was going to have a heart attack. I was laughing so hard I couldn't even take a breath in. Because it wasn't, he swallowed the bug, it was funny. And they're talking about it, it's just kind of a silly conversation, and it's funny, and it's good. But the fact that I'm like, oh, he'll never tell Rebecca.
The next thing
he does is tell Rebecca.
You know, the funny thing about Eric is he's thinking these thoughts, and then all of a sudden they're flying out of his mouth, you know? It's just like,
like the poor girl in the Paris bed and breakfast. He just
tells her
all about Rebecca. He's just like,
I know.
Oh, shut up, Eric. Shut up. And she's just like, okay.
What are you talking about?
When they speak of the bed and breakfast, they get out of the catacombs, and they're like, They don't want to go to a hotel because they don't have their identification, so they go
wandering. So he told her the whole thing?
No, just about
how he failed at that. Because she was asking
the Corpus Christi chick.
About how the girlfriend,
she's not my girlfriend, kind of. And she's like,
what's her name? Jessica? Jennifer? No. Rebecca, no. Jennifer, no.
Yeah. They were like,
But sometimes I call her Rebecca, and she's like, yeah, well, what's up with that?
Yeah, I know. It's like, no, I just love the things that just kind of fly out of his mouth.
Well, that's what I like about him, though. Yeah.
I know. You love it. I mean, you love him.
I liked how you mentioned, Dustin Hoffman and Julia Roberts.
Oh, that was so great.
It's so something that Hollywood would do.
Unless, of course,
a Republican is president, and then it wouldn't happen.
I loved all the CNN stuff, too. That was so
great. What was that?
So true.
It was true, though.
Fox News is a statement, and MSNBC, who cares?
These are just all our little parts.
These are just the things that make it so much fun to read what you write, whether it be blogs or books or...
Seriously.
Commentary. I love that you do commentary on the chapters, because, there's only a certain... You don't love it in a certain movie that you love to be able to go and listen to what they say and get some background?
Did they do this?
That all sprang from the fact that I wrote it so many times, and I loved all of the... Basically, it's all the stuff that isn't in the book that I really wanted to put in the book. So that's why in the goodies section, there's so many deleted scenes.
The prologue. That fascinated me when you wrote what you did in the goodies section about the prologue.
Oh, how it started out so many different ways. And
I thought the two different ways, I thought that would have been very interesting.
See, I know there's debate about prologue and epilogue amongst authors. I think there are places for prologue and epilogue as long as it's not a whole other chapter.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It needs to be. And I think you tied both of those in really well. I enjoyed the prologue and the epilogue. Some of them I'm like, is the story over yet for crying out loud? We hit the last chapter.
Yeah, well, and you know,
this was good. I liked it.
Thank you.
That all, again, is, like I said, I didn't know anything about writing, and I wrote on second thought, and it has a prologue to it.
Mm-hmm.
And before I ever wrote on second thought, actually, it was while I was writing Wicked Moments Over, is the first time I ever took a creative writing class. And so, I started using the prologue, and I didn't even know what they were for. And so, it doesn't really work so much on second thought, but I think it works really well in Counterfeit. But
it does.
But and there's an epilogue in Wicked Moments Over, but there's not a prologue. So.
You would have had an uprising if you wouldn't have had your epilogue.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
That one indeed an epilogue. That one,
nasty letters. I would have written you a nasty letter.
I would have signed it.
Yes. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, it would have been like,
we needed to know what happened to them.
I mean, that's, you just need that.
They needed closure. Yes. We needed closure for them.
Right.
So. Well, and you're done with the series.
I'm done with the series.
It needed to end and be... Good, because
what else can happen to them? They're just married and they're going to have kids.
A lot of people have emailed me or whatever and said, there needs to be a second one because Edward is still out there and Ruben is still out there.
I was wondering about that with Eric out there.
I really don't feel that with Edward. Edward and Raven. Yeah. I feel like, you know, sometimes you get them and sometimes you don't.
That's totally what I had written then.
I agree.
Well, and again, it's the plausibility thing. Like, I could write a sequel and say what happens to Edward, but how many times can Eric and Rebecca get into trouble?
You know, leave them alone. Let them enjoy their married life. They're married now.
It was like, plus, it was her father. Down. It wasn't like some random person. It was her father. And he sends that letter, and you're just like, oh, okay. Well, maybe leave them alone.
Yeah. You know, that's okay, because you know what? Don't you get a little tired of everything being wrapped up all neat and tidy all the time?
Yeah, actually,
that's true. A lot of LDS authors do that.
I mean, and there is a certain genre or a certain style of writing where it needs to be all nice and fluffy, because that's kind of, and neat and tidy at the end, because that's kind of how it was through the book. But then there are sometimes when you're like, oh, and of course everyone's going to get baptized and be married in the temple and the pathway ever after.
And that's
you
not
know, and so I kind of like having that.
It surprised me. I actually like that, because it surprised me. And at first I was like, wait a minute.
But Felix.
But then I went, wait a second. No, wait, this is more realistic anyway. So that would make sense.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I need to know where you got your inspiration for Felix, because he's just Felix such
awesome.
A character.
He's kind of likable.
Just picturing him all angry and bloody, driving down the road in that station wagon, racing in the rain. You know, I mean, that's just, I want to know where you got Where Felix came from.
Going back to favorite characters, I love Felix. I think Felix is awesome. He's fun to write. Like, I don't think there are any other characters that I would write and I would get more into, like, just loving to put myself in his head. Because he is fun, and he's just such a punk, and
he's rather arrogant, isn't he?
He's arrogant, and he's just sarcastic, and I love him.
What nationality is he? I mean, what kind of, is he Italian? I guess that's not nationality, but you know.
Yeah, he's from the Midwest. Background? He's from Nebraska. Okay.
Yeah, in my mind, I've seen him as this Italian guy. Yeah.
I didn't know. I pictured him more punk-ish of a Russian.
Russian or something like that.
Felix isn't his real name. But I never decided what his real name is. But yeah, they explain a little bit in Wake Me When It's Over. Not a ton, but yeah, he grew up in Omaha. And
Italians live in Omaha.
You're right, they do. No, he is like it says, it describes him as a golf pro. He's just like a your average American guy.
Like silver gray hair? And a polo shirt. Or is he younger than that?
He's about the same age as Edward, so he's in his probably mid to late 40s.
I pictured him a lot older for some reason.
I did.
In my head, the name. It was just the name. The name just
maybe so.
I just kind of went, oh, he's older.
I pictured him between 40 and 50.
I did too.
But I was kind of. I was more in the 50-60 range.
I pictured him more as kind of a little bit heavier.
Shorter.
And a little shorter and balding.
Yeah, that's exactly. He is short. I did picture the balding. That's about the only thing I had in common there with you.
and you know, a little bit of balding, older and a little shorter. A little. Just a little pudgy. Not big, just a little pudgy.
Yeah, he could be a little pudgy. In Wake Me When It's Over, if you notice, every single scene he's in, he's eating something.
Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Maybe that's where I got the little pudgy from. Yeah. But just the thought of, the, you know, just seeing him in the car with his legs between...
That was just like, yeah.
When that airbag went off, and
what are you doing?
How can you breathe? I don't know if I have the courage to do that with what Rebecca did. Crash into the...
On purpose, yeah.
Because I was like, awesome.
And then there's Eric, who's so dense. She's like, brace yourself, brace yourself, brace yourself.
Like, oh, whoa. I was with him. I'm like, what is she talking
I know.
About? I'm like, oh, great. Well, if she's dense, so am I then. I missed that totally. I'm like, well, what is she talking about?
Perfectly logical for him to look in the glove box.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I'm like,
how does she know what's in the glove box? She didn't open it, did she?
Well, I thought maybe she glanced in there earlier or something.
I know, that's what I thought.
I missed, I'm like, what is she talking about?
All I know is I don't ever want to be hit with an airbag. I hope I never get hit with an airbag, because it sure doesn't sound very much.
Have you been hit with an airbag?
I have, and that's
so you knew it.
Is this where
that's how all that description came from? Is because and it was a faulty airbag that went off it was my young men's presence car. I was like 17.
Yikes.
And he was driving us home, and like he bumped the curb as he went into our house, into our parking lot, and it went off. And it shattered the front window, because it's one of those that's like up on top of the dash. Shattered the front window. There's a guy in the back seat who it because the airbag goes up and forward, the passenger side one does. And so it went up and forward. It knocked the rearview mirror off and hit the guy in the back in the head. But seriously, it feels like you get hit with a 2x4. Yeah, because I was in the passenger seat. Yeah.
Oh. So. Did it force glass instead? Because you said it broke the windshield.
Yeah,
broke
the windshield
first, and then
it didn't like shatter it or anything, but it just cracked it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like any fun to me.
My dad came charging out of the house with a fire extinguisher because there's so much smoke when it goes off.
So that would be the scene with the scene that was inspired by real life.
I guess. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, very much. Yeah.
Have you ever owned a moped?
I've never owned a moped.
How Edward Marcy's like out to get him. I'm like, what's with this? She gets this nice car and this nice house and
I know.
A moped. But his name's Maurice, no less.
Maurice.
I know.
I love the name of the
Maurice is named after my mission president.
I was wondering about that.
I thought that was so nice. What a name for moped.
But it was Edward that gave him the moped, and it was Edward that was going to blow him up.
That very part, true. Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah, towards the end of
felt bad for the poor little thing. Didn't even have a chance.
I was kind of bummed that he never found the ring.
Wait a minute. I thought that, didn't Eric find the ring at some point? In one of the writings? Or did he, it was always gone.
It's always gone.
Oh. See, that's more realistic. I mean, it would have been great if he'd found it, because, well, kind of, it maybe would have had
but there was,
like,
not a lot of sentimental value with it. Like,
exactly.
Except for Francis Lopez is 120 years old, and it's like, tools.
Gone.
Yeah.
That's okay. Gone.
But he finds the shrapnel, you know? It's like, oh, she, no, the spark plug.
You know what? Even though I knew it was coming, it still got me this time, that scene. It just gets you, with the bomb. It always gets me. It's just, you know, I knew it was coming. It's there. Just shocks me every time. And the description is really good.
Well, I didn't have any idea. I hadn't read it until yesterday.
Oh yeah. See,
so I was just like, oh
yeah. See,
I'm not read the manuscript, but
yeah, after she got it, she read it.
Yeah.
By then, I kind of liked. I mean, not that I didn't like her before, but I liked her so much. And I got to know her in this one. I'm like, no, I like her.
I don't know. I see part of Rebecca in me, although I can't play violin for the life of me.
No.
But as far as strong moral compass goes and everything, you know, like there's certain things I can relate to with
very good people.
I'm not saying anything like her, but there are things I relate to with her.
Yeah, thank you for developing Rebecca.
Yeah.
She was, because that's what I felt was really missing from Wake Me When It's Over. I wanted to get to know her better. And then with this, it's like, you did it. We brought her just so well that...
And now we know she's okay for Eric.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that was one thing we...
Well, one thing that I'm kind of sad about, but you can find it on the website, but one thing I'm kind of bummed about is that there is... I wanted... One of the problems I thought where people didn't relate to Rebecca in Wake Me When It's Over is that you never see her when she's not in a crisis.
Oh.
And so she's always really upset.
True.
Right.
And so... The beginning of this, when it was, it used to have a lot of stuff on the island with them just kind of dorking around on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And that got cut for time. But it's just a lot of stuff with them kind of developing the character and developing their relationship.
Aww.
And it's more happy and jokey. And that's all, those deleted scenes are on the website.
That's good.
If you look in chapter, I think, 4, they're on there on the website.
I really like how she's strong, but she's still... is vulnerable for things. Like, you know, she's not super tough woman, because it seems like either
she's
get a wuss, or you
mean,
get one that's way too strong.
She's very intelligent.
You know, or when she dashes out of the subway and Eric's not prepared for that, you don't expect her to be running full speed.
No,
you
know?
No.
But I like how she even though she's hurt,
so
she still works hard.
Yeah.
I always felt so bad for Rebecca as a musician myself. I mean, I'm not a violinist. I play the piano and sing, and she never got to perform at these huge.
She never did.
Just made me go, couldn't you just let her perform once at one of these huge performances? Just, you know, it's just like she kept getting pulled away. And
You know, an interesting thing about her, and I want to get your opinion on this.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Josie Kilpack, if you guys know Josie Kilpack, she's another LDS author, and she read it, and she sent me a comment that I thought was really interesting, and I'd never thought about it. But she didn't like Rebecca in Wake Me When It's Over either.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the beginning of this one, she didn't. And then later on in the book, she did. And she said that the reason was is that Rebecca is too perfect. That she is rich and she is smart and she's well educated
and
she's
talented
and she's pretty
and
she's skinny and she's all this other stuff. Yeah. And then
I'm blonde.
And then when she blows up, then you start to see flaws, the vulnerability.
Right.
And so And
you see the strength in her still coming out, even though she's really hurt, and you can kinda relate that to where it seems like she's a little too perfect. Maybe that's she's always had to try and maintain that look or that seem perfect because of all of the struggle, the crappy dad and the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it really makes the reader as well as Rebecca face herself and her situation and what is really happening when she gets blown up.
Right. Yeah, and well, and a part of it is that she appears perfect because it's from
Eric's point of view.
Yeah, that's exactly. True.
I agree with that. I mean, he's describing her coming in the door, and it's like angelic and everything. Is right. You know, though, and the whole time you're like, I knew girls like that.
Yeah,
I'll be late. I knew girls like that.
Yeah,
but, that wasn't me.
But a very wonderful book.
Yes,
excellent. We love the counterfeit.
I strongly recommend it as gifts for Christmas.
Definitely. Oh, that's not a bad idea.
For your husbands, brothers, whatever. I mean, I think that
it's a crowd pleaser as a general.
Because usually you think LDS fiction is for women, but you know what? There is some good LDS fiction for guys out there, and I'd have to suggest this one very strongly.
Anyone that's interested in Europe or fiction, the historical side,
the action,
there's romance, there's everything.
But it's not too much romance. It's nice.
Well, no, but there's just enough that you can go, and then move on before the next crisis, you know?
Which you already know I feel this way, but you know what?
Yeah, she's our big romance.
No, I love those too.
They each have their place. But you know what? The only thing I would change about this is that the humor would stay.
I know.
We love your humor.
That is what.
Absolutely. Just a little bit more of it.
See, I can understand Tone Down compared to Wake Me, but I kind of felt it was toned down a little too much for my liking.
Because it has to go from this to this. It was a big shock. It really was.
I know.
It really was a huge shock because, I mean, we love this.
Are you saying that we should write to Covenant and tell them that
still
let
them hear the podcast?
We can write all we want. It's the numbers that
make it. It's totally sales numbers.
But I really think, like you said before, it's the cover of this one that
throws it off.
Yeah,
that totally throws it off.
But you know what? I think this is great as suspense. It's great as action. And as it is, it's wonderful. It's got just enough humor. If you hadn't read Wake Me When It's Over, you get totally caught up in the book. There's nothing that would disparage it. And having read Wake Me When It's Over and fallen in love with the humor aspect of it, I do wish there was a tad bit more of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm with you.
Just a personal desire of my own. Doesn't
you.
Make
no, you're
your
not
dad like
well,
it at all.
I'm with
it's a wonderful book.
Again, read the website personally. And the goodies, because a lot of the deleted scenes are the funny stuff, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm.
There's and I got to read those before.
You did read those.
Mm-hmm.
The thing in the salon with the hair.
Oh,
the
yeah.
That's my favorite scene in the whole book. And I got cut because it doesn't have a point. It's just funny.
Yeah. Which is okay.
Funny,
so. You know, it was funny.
But it's on the
I was thinking, Rebecca. It was so clever and kind of mean to put him on the spot like that. And he's in practice. And so he's like, oh, pulmonary. And you know, it's just so funny. It's
right.
Funny. You have to read it to understand those, because that makes no sense what I just said. But anyway, I don't know. I think I don't have anything else. Any other questions?
Good. You?
Cool.
I think we've had a good discussion. It's an hour and 50 minutes.
Holy smokes, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not going to split this thing into two or anything. It's just going to be as it is. So
I agree.
Because we already covered it. We covered everything. We talked about the book. Go buy it for Christmas. And seriously, I want to do for the next podcast. I would like to go through some of the books that we've been sent to review and things like that. Pick out which ones you want to read. And then I want to talk about books, some that we've talked about on the podcast, but mainly other ones, as far as gift suggestions for
that's a great Christmas
and things like that. Because it's going to be November when it comes out, mid-November, people are going to start going to want to do their Christmas shopping. And so I want to...
I will investigate the children and the young adult. Serious.
Okay, I do the children, young adult stuff.
My
you look into nonfiction.
I know.
As far
like, I wonder what I'll be assigned.
Especially with the LDS nonfiction, as far as there's some things that you're gonna like. That in fact, I got Dean Hughes' next one. I want to
fiction,
review.
But yeah,
no, for me.
Oh, for you.
Nonfiction.
Like
I've
heard of him.
The Dean Hughes that I will read. And
for nonfiction, check out Sweetwater Rescue.
That looks
Sweetwater Rescue.
So good.
It's a movie and a book.
Yes,
really,
it's very good.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about it because I think that would be really good. I don't know if it'll be at the library in time, so I might just buy it and say, here, read it. Because I want to... Is that through Covenant?
Yes.
Okay, we need to talk to Covenant. They need to send us some stuff.
Cool.
We would love to.
I'd love to be able to
talk
about the Covenant stuff in the next podcast. About what we recommend for gifts and everything, especially since we've reviewed so many of their things on the podcast already.
It's
right.
Just naturally happened.
Yeah.
As we picked up books.
So,
a lot of good authors.
What do you guys think? So. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, it'll work for me.
Okay, we'll just talk about the books we've read and different suggestions. We don't all have to read each book either, so we can just put our personal recommendations
for Christmas gifts. Well, that's good, because that's a lot of
reading. And I have birthdays and stuff coming up. I can't do it.
Well, so. I have a lot of children's books that would be great for gifts, that especially Christmas books and different things that I've
been collecting through the years. Well, and I wonder what new is coming out in LDS.
I will look. I will look into all of that.
So. Okay. Well, thank you, Rob, for coming and
thank
joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
This has been a blast.
This has been fun. I love talking about my books. So.
But we love having you. I want to talk about your books.
When
we
your next talk book about comes out, too. We will have you come back.
It's a deal. Yes.
Maybe so they'll actually get my quote. If I'm asked again, I know if it really stunk, then they probably wouldn't, but...
No, thank you very much.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to that, so...
Sounds wonderful.
And pass on to Mr. Gardner, if you would, that we're looking forward to his next
book. Right.
And that we enjoy. I don't know if he listened to the podcast or not, the one we did against Race Against Time, Pursuit of Justice. But
Stephanie said that she had told him about it. I remember on the forum. Please join us at the forum, too.
Yeah, the forum
really
is really
need
slow
some people
right now.
Coming to, back to the forum and so we can discuss things.
Oh, and
quit looking at me.
No, I'm just, you're a backdrop, sweetie.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for joining us, everyone, for episode 9 of LDS Woman's Book Review. We will update the website with pictures and different information. Rob's website's already on there, so you can go to the links and find his website there and go check out all the goodies on the counterfeit. You won't be disappointed. Of course, I will recommend reading the book first.
Yes.
Oh, amen. Definitely do that.
You'll be sorry.
And you won't be sorry about, if you buy the book, you won't regret it. If you check it out from the library if they've got it, but you
yes,
will not regret it.
This is one that I would take on my desk.
Fair warning.
Oh, yes.
You forgot fair to ask warning, the question. Fair warning. You'll be number 170-something if you try to get on hold, because that's what I was going
to
do, and then
it'll
it
be worth
work.
It to buy it.
So I'm just going
to
buy it, and I'm glad I did, because it was worth it.
Okay, so is it a keeper?
This
it'll
is a keeper.
Right with my waiting
would you do this every month?
Would you read it again?
Yes.
Most definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
All done.
Yep.
Sweet. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next
time. Toodaloo.